Joey Reynolds. Joey Reynolds. Late night, that's hip for the young and the old. Joey Reynolds. Joey Reynolds. Late night, that's smart, authentic, and bold. Nationwide. Or give him a call from your home, job, or car. Joey Reynolds. Joey Reynolds. Late night with flair to keep you awake. Joey Reynolds. Joey Reynolds. Late night, that's rich like Joey Cheesecake. 800-321-0710. Once again, 800-321-0710.
Our very own Hall of Famer.
He's still a gamer.
Joey Reynolds.
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 I'm cold. That's Bobby Belfry. We got to turn the air conditioning off in this station, you know. You guys, remember when we didn't have any a couple of years ago and all I was doing was belly aching how we didn't have any air? This makes up for it, you know. We're in a business of malcontents when you're in show business, because nobody's ever happy. How can you be? You're always on the way to something. You're on the way to being somebody else or some part or something that you didn't get in your life or something that's unsatisfied after you got it. It's just bitching. But, you know, we've made a whole lifetime out of it on radio and television now. That's what we do. We did the bitch format, you know. I mean, you get out there and you bitch. It's so American, isn't it? I mean, you know, you complain. Even when everything's too good. It's too good, and they say, it's a dull day today. You know, I love when they call it the unseasonable temperature. What does that mean? What's unseasonable? It's summer, you know. What we have all these little words that we use that give you that little negative side shot, you know, so that you never feel really good about yourself, and then you can't feel good about what's going on because you can't feel good about you. And we box ourselves in with that, and it's very infectious. You know, we get a little bit of a poison from each other sometimes when we do this. So it's very difficult to have a good customer service head, you know, where someone in your head is reminding you that you're okay and everything's good and you're going to be right in the place that you belong. That's why we have therapists. It astounds me that we demand perfection from others and we can't give it to ourselves. You know, and I want to have everything run on time. You know, I mean, when something goes a little bit wrong, all of a sudden it's someone else's fault. I guess it began in the Bible with Adam and Eve. You know, I mean, Adam and Eve set the tone, the first two on this planet. There was a husband and well, they weren't even married. You know, that even set the tone. But Adam and Eve were together. They were joined together. And when God came down and says, hey, you know, who did this? And Adam said it was her. That was the beginning. You know, the blame game began with those two. Right from the start, it was the woman's fault. And, you know, it hasn't changed much since, has it? And then the brother killed the other brother because he didn't like what he had. So, you know, when you can't have what you want, then you take it from someone else. That's how Little Italy started. You know, we're interested in a way in this culture of getting people to like each other and to be in a community. Difficult to get everybody in the same room anymore now that we have all these toys. iPod, my pod, your pod, their pod. Nobody's pod. Everybody's podding, you know. I've never seen so many pods in my life. But we have a definite need for us to sit together one day and have a meeting and decide that that some things are broken and others need to be repaired in a different way. So we'll do that. I think we'll all get together and do that eventually. You know, I'm hopeful. I have the hope of this generation, especially after traveling this year with the shows that we've done all over the world. I think I learned in Russia that the 30-somethings were not so much interested in politics and military. And then when I was in Israel, we did the show from Israel, they also, it seemed like the 30-somethings, 20-somethings a little bit more fledgling, but the 30-somethings seemed to be more centered on progress and their work, their professions, their talents. And I guess we're going to do a show from China. That's coming up in the fall, you know. And every time I go around somewhere and we get the people in the different age groups that are responsible for progress, it seems to be 30-something. That seems to be the active number. For me, it is anyway. That's where the action is. They've just come through a little bit of the craziness and not enough to be sourdough. And it's a great place. So 30-somethings, you're my hope. I put my money on the 30s, 31, 32, 38. You guys seem to be the ones who are going to make it work. And maybe we need a president at that age. How about that? Because the cops certainly are looking younger to me, but that's because I'm getting older. You know, all the new cops today, I saw the new batch of police. They had the police graduates, and they look like teenagers. But that's when you get older. You know, everybody that you ever respected when you were a kid was an older person, and now I'm older than they are. So that's the natural order of life, but you can't get used to it. I was telling somebody today, too, about this. We were talking about the CBS FM radio station that came back to New York with the oldies. And CBS seems to have dismantled everything that made any money for them. With Imus and Howard Stern and CBS FM radio, you know, these are all their properties that were making millions of dollars when Mel Karmazin was running it. And then he went over to Sirius after he had a serious argument with CBS ownership. And he started this little satellite, well, he didn't start Sirius Satellite, but he started to market it and brought Howard Stern over there and gave him a lot of money. So, you know, when you got a guy like that who knows how to make money and then he shifts somewhere else, you expect that he's going to be very successful. But they haven't done that yet. You know, they haven't been able to get that same magic going on the satellite. And probably it will eventually work, and maybe they need to merge. I don't know. I thought it was a lot smarter if they just had one radio that picked up both signals rather than having two different companies that need to be together. Because, you know, radio essentially is choice. It's freedom of choice. And not so much of the channeling, but rather because of the designated responsibility to the community, which we seem to miss these days. You know, I mean, nobody seems to be accountable to anybody else. That's the little trick we've all played on each other. Nobody reports to anybody. That's what consultants did. They removed anybody being blamed for anything. Talk about Adam and Eve again. Who was their consultant? You know, they didn't have one. Maybe we need to just go back to some of these things and research, because we haven't searched. Now, to get to the point of all of this stuff tonight, you know, we have a lot of different kinds of guests on the show, as you know. And you could probably, this is like the weather in Norman, Oklahoma. If you don't like it, you wait a minute. And that's what the show's like. You know, if you don't like what's going on, you just wait a second and we'll be on to something else. I got the best attention disorder as a host in the country. So, you know, if you get bored with me in a minute and a half, it'll be something else. Ben Feldman is here. He's written Butchery on Bond Street, which is about sexual politics. Now, I don't know exactly how to get into this thing. He has definitely an interesting background, and he worked in New York City for 30-some years. He's 30. You must be 38 years old.
I'm 55.
Is that right? Well, you're out of the demographic.
Yeah, a little, you know, a little plastic surgery, you know, whatever, you know, good eating.
But you went to Columbia University,
yes,
law
sir.
School, right?
Yep.
And you retired from that.
I kicked the habit in November 2000, spent 13 years with a guy named Steve Green, and we took SL Green public in 97, Mark Green's older brother,
yeah.
Now the owners of, Al Franken's radio station, Air America.
Air America,
just
yeah.
Bought and had a great time doing that, and then turned to something I really love, which is reading and writing New York City history. And this is a murder book. It's sexual politics, that's the larger context, but this is about an infamous, infamous murder case in its day, bigger than OJ ever has been in ours. You pick up the newspaper in New York City in 1857 from February 1st through Labor Day. This story is front page, left-hand top column. Dred Scott in the Supreme Court, that's on the second page. The filibusters going down to Nicaragua, the original term, the guys, the adventurers, that's on the fifth page. The Panic of 1857, August 24th, that's on page 7. This murder is front page news, hook, line, and sinker. Tore this town apart.
Well, why don't we know of it? How come we're not talking about it?
You know, why do people forget about it? I spoke at the Tenement Museum tonight, earlier in the evening, and that question, that very intelligent question, was posed by a younger man. And, you know, why do people ultimately forget about a famous murder case, you know? It's a wonderful question, and all I could say is that a case grabs the media's attention and grabs the public attention for a reason. Maybe it's really bloody, maybe it's Lizzie Borden knocking off her parents, but the reason this case split this town apart is it's the first time that an upper-middle-class man, or a middle-class man, because lower-class men were murdered by their wives, their girlfriends, their mistresses, their whores all the time.
Still,
sure, but middle class, upper middle class men, members of the so-called Sporting Gentlemen's Society that ran this town in the 1850s, they got away with, well, give the girl a few bucks, she'll shut up, don't give her nothing. They don't dare. Don't dare. This guy got stuck 15 times with a four-sided dirk. You know what a dirk is.
No.
Okay, it's a pig sticker, what we call it down south where I grew up. He got stuck 15 times, carotid artery severed, ligature. He was strangled with strangled in a pool of his own blood in his dental clinic. Maybe she did it, maybe she didn't do it. He got what he deserved. It's the first time ever that a guy didn't get away with it. He got what he would deserve. I'm sorry about his childhood. His mother threw him out of the house, the poor guy. That doesn't excuse shit. Nothing. Excuse my French.
We'll be right back, now that you're speaking French. There Joey Reynolds Show, live from New York. Could tell he's from New Orleans. Ben Feldman is here. He's the brother of Glenna Friedman. How could you be Ben Feldman Friedman? Give me that book. Let me see
client,
that thing.
Client.
Well, let me see what that thing is here. Yeah. I got to see what this is. Client. Yeah, she's got something written here. I don't want to be sounding stupid. Stay. Do it again. You want to take shit off there, don't you?
Excuse me. I'm supposed to say that.
No, he's got. It's one of the seven words.
Oh, okay.
Benjamin Feldman is here. He's written Butchery on Bond Street, which is sexual politics. Now, where does politics come into this thing?
This case, when Harvey Burdell was found in a pool of his own blood on the floor of his dental office,
yeah,
this town took notice. Everybody got in the act. Boss Tweed was already running New York through his troika. The DA, Abraham Elegant Oakey Hall, who ended up being mayor in 1870 and was part of the Tweed ring, was the prosecutor. Samuel J. Tilden, who ran for president in 1876, was involved in the estate litigation. Everybody in the case was making political football. The governor got involved. The nature of New York City's police force, control of the municipal police force, was just being fought out between the Republicans and the Democrats. No more mayoral control. A new commission instituted. This town was on fire with politics, and everybody wanted to make political capital out of this case. That's the politics. Sexual politics? Women on one side, men on the other. Every breakfast table in this town, the women say, he got what he deserved, maybe she did it, she should have done it. The men are saying, listen, this was a respectable dentist. This guy was a scientific dentist, a well-respected man downtown in his public life. In his private life, he was what they call in Yiddish a mamzer. You know, he was a bastard. That's not one of the seven words, I don't think. And, you know, he's a creep, and that's where the rubber met the road. Barrooms, salons, beer halls, private breakfast tables. This town was split apart by the sexual politics, by the gender politics. You got the women's liberationists at the time, the Susan B. Anthony's on one side, and you got the old guard on the other, including every establishment newspaper editor in this town.
So it was 18-something.
1857.
Yeah. Why would you hang on to something from that time?
It's like people ask me that, and when I found out about this story at Greenwood Cemetery in Memorial Day of 2000, I couldn't put it down. I said, I've never read a story like this. This woman, okay, she got indicted and tried but acquitted of murder. She got lucky. She hired a lawyer who was a combination of Johnny Cochran and Clarence Darrow. He got her off. He turned the tide of public opinion. She got raped, impregnated, and then an abortion produced upon her with this dentist's bare hands. He did all these things to this woman, a mother, a widow with five children. All she really wanted was a husband who would take care of her. Didn't have to be the nicest guy in the world, and she picked the wrong guy.
Yeah, she wound up with a good dental plan.
She ended up with a good dental plan.
Well, you know, here we had the Gangs of New York was around that time.
That's correct.
And we had the Irish immigration.
Yep.
We also have in this cemetery next door to us where this building is, you know, this is Trinity mm-hmm. Cemetery, you know, Alexander Hamilton
sure.
with his famous duel. He is buried there.
Yep.
You know, this is a very hot spot right where you're sitting now.
I love it.
Yeah, this is the neighborhood. This is the hood.
Yes, sir.
Now, where was this dental office, this clinic?
That's a great question. You know, right across the street, up a few blocks. Burdell's original clinic with his older brother, John Burdell, who's Black and White Poles Apart from his rapacious younger brother. They shared a clinic together at 69 Chambers Street. You know where the old New York Sun building is? Sure. Where the Department of Buildings is now. 280 Broadway, built in 1847, the A.T. Stewart Marble Palace Department Store. John and Harvey Burdell's first dental clinic was right there in a little brick house that was knocked down in 1847. That's where they started. 21 Chambers Street they also practiced. Harvey moved up to 354 Broadway. Walk up Broadway during daylight hours, please, Joey. You'll see a little building there. That's where Harvey Burdell's, it's still there. And when I see these things, I go nuts. I leave my body. And Harvey ended up on Bond Street, 31 Bond Street. 31's not there. It was knocked down in 05. That's where the murder took place. But across the street on ritzy Bond Street today, you see a little building, 26 Bond Street, that's a clone. Take a look in my book, take a look on my blog, you'll see pictures of where the crime happened, what the stairwell looked like, where the servant boy ran down crying bloody murder after he found the corpse. And if you like this stuff, as you obviously do, you're here in one of the most famous sites in this entire wonderful country, you'll love 31 Bond Street and its butchery. It's about raising the dead. In Yiddish, you call it Tachias and Mesim. Christians like it, Jews like it, Muslims probably like it. I don't know much about Muslim religion. But raising the dead is really a lot of fun, you know, bringing things back to life.
Well, if it didn't happen, there wouldn't be a Christian religion.
And that answers your question, too. Why did I get involved in this story? Because I love to raise the dead.
Now, the interest that you have in this particular crime is almost uncanny. I mean, do you think you were here in the last life and this was something that did you have an out of body thing?
Maybe in a way. I mean, this is just what I do. I mean, the history. I walk around New York. I don't see what's in front of me. I see what used to be there. I go up to the UN. I don't see the General Assembly building. I see Emma Hempstead Cunningham, the accused murderess's second boyfriend, John Eckel, who's in the book, who was a indicted co-conspirator. I see his tallow rendering and his bone boiling shop that was up there in the Slaughterhouse District, which you remember as a kid was on First Avenue for years and years and years till it was all knocked down by Rockefeller when he donated or sold the land to the UN in 1950. That abattoir district was there for 100 years. It's got a connection to this case.
Well, everything changes in all of our world, and you have probably you're the best example. I mean, you gave up law.
Yeah, you know, that was fun. I had a wonderful time doing it. Making money, there's no better kick.
Talk about making a killing.
Yeah, making a killing, whatever. I worked my tail off, and I had a great partner, a guy with a pair of candelabra named Steve Green, you know?
Yeah.
Had a great time. But I wanted to do something else. You do one thing, you get a certain pile together or whatever, and then you do another thing. Piling money up is really... It's great for people who want to do it, but there's other things to do in life, too.
Yeah, there's something to do with the money, too, when you get it.
Yeah.
So what did you do? You got out of lawyering and then you got into the stock market?
No.
What'd you do?
Actually, I practiced law for 4 years. I grew up in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, in Oak Ridge where the atom bomb was made. My dad was a soldier. 10 years old, I decided I'm moving to New York City. My godfather was from what they called Rivington Street when he was a kid, Rivington Street. And Nathan Detroit and Guys and Dolls, I'm moving to New York when I was 10. Came, went to Columbia College, went to Columbia Law School, got a law degree. Practiced for 4 years and then went in-house in real estate companies. Spent 20 years in real estate companies, the last 13 years with my mentor, Steve Green, and one of the five partners who took the company public. Finally, we had ups, we had downs. We lost a lot of money, but we never fooled around. We were honest. We didn't screw the banks.
Hold on for a minute. Benjamin Feldman, it's too bad about that. The butcher on Bond Street, be right back. You should have screwed the banks. We like that. All right. So I guess the crime of the century would probably be O.J. Simpson of this century. Would you say?
I don't know of a bigger one. How do you measure these things? But boy,
well, because he got away with it.
People are going to be talking about O.J. for a long... Yes, that's a great answer. And Emma Cunningham probably got away with this crime too. She probably did it.
Well, I don't think the consciousness is as keen about the butchery on Bond Street as it is with O.J. Simpson, because we still feel the guy's still walking among us.
Well, let's see.
I mean, you know, when you see a murderer with a golf club, You know that all he's done is change his weapon.
I'm going to give you another factoid. What you're saying is true. Let's see in 50 years if OJ still remembers. When Emma Cunningham was buried in 1887 and a funeral service was performed in a private home on East 119th Street in East Harlem, private service, her niece's home, there were crowds outside 30 years after Burdell's murder jeering Emma Cunningham at her own funeral because she was still notorious.
Yeah. Well, so what she did was she murdered this dentist.
Yep.
And there was a 15 stab wounds. And it was a grisly end. Did she chop him up too?
He was not chopped up, but they could not peel his clothes off of him.
Well, there was a guy who today was a woman had murdered her husband, and they found his body parts in designer suitcases. Did you hear that on the news tonight?
I didn't hear that.
Yeah. And she had taken and chopped him up. Yes. You know, I mean, that's so, you can't even think about it. She ran off with her lover, and since she had medical experience, she was able to dispose of the bodies, and they came floating to the I think it was a Chesapeake where the designer luggage showed up. You know, there's this head in a Louis Vuitton bag. It was probably a knockoff.
Well, I'll tell you, Emma did one better, though, you know, because this woman, Emma Cunningham, no shrinking violet. She wanted Burdell's money. She was entitled to it. She'd been taken advantage of. So she didn't stop. You or I, Joey, if we were just barely escaped the noose around our neck down in the tomb's courtyard, we'd sort of lay low for a while.
Yeah.
Not Emma.
No.
She went into surrogate's court. She sued to get his money. She was faked a marriage to the guy. And then when she lost all that those legal fights, she faked the pregnancy of his unborn child and got caught in a sting by the district attorney who wanted revenge for losing the murder case.
Well, we didn't have DNA in those days.
No DNA.
No.
Hired a baby from the indigent ward in Bellevue Hospital, a bucket of blood, some lying-in rooms, and she got caught doing all this stuff and went to jail again in Jefferson Market down in the
village. How long? Were these short sentences before Giuliani?
She got out in a month. No, they couldn't. There was not enough evidence of criminal intent, and then she went out west and married a silver miner who died on her too.
Another honest man.
Another honest man.
So this is a media circus that took place.
Unbelievable. P.T. Barnum gets involved.
Oh, yeah, speaking
P.T.
of circus.
P.T. Barnum, you know, had a museum. Before he was in the circus business, we started late in his life, he had a museum here at Fulton and Broadway, 222 Broadway, and he was hungry for acts, like you're hungry for visitors on your show.
He had a woman who had a baby sticking out of the stomach and not fully delivered.
You know it. Joyce Heth. He had Tom Thumb. He had Jenny Lind.
Yeah.
He had Emma, a wax cutout, wax figure of Emma Cunningham and the mother, this horrible woman at Bellevue, he said she was horrible, who would rent her baby out for money to help the district attorney out in this scheme. 25,000 people poured through Barnum's museum, paid 10 cents to see the most wicked women on earth.
So this was a sideshow.
Unbelievable attention, this thing. Don't believe me. Look in the papers.
No, I believe you. They on the boardwalk in Coney Island, they got a Reynolds, believe it, you're nuts.
There you go.
That's pretty much the same thing. So she was a widow then.
A widow with five children.
Yeah. She was very busy.
Oh, yeah.
And lived in a Bond Street townhouse.
She moved in when she settled a breach of promise suit with the dentist. He thought he could buy her off by moving her in and let her rent out rooms and run a little business there. She wasn't giving up. She wasn't giving up. She kept on her campaign. He meanwhile moved in his 21-year-old niece, who was divorcing her own philandering husband, proceeded to sleep with his niece right under his former girlfriend's nose there in 31 Bond. It was a circus down there.
So you were not here for this.
I was not present, but maybe
it's 150 years ago. So
exactly.
Now this is a mystery story, and it unravels with the secrets of the human soul. But it paints a rich, unforgettable portrait of 19th century New York, and we had a different kind of a city back in those days. Who was mayor?
During this,
you said Boss Tweed. He was running the
Tammany
Hall.
He's running the show. Boss Tweed never held municipal elective office.
No, I didn't know that.
He
had his hand up everybody's back and in their pockets.
Whichever piece of clothing you care to describe, he controlled this town through three people. At the when the murder happened, a guy named Fernando Wood was mayor of this town, one of the first non-aristocratic mayors.
One of the most unknown mayors in the history of the city.
I think so, although his brother George Wood ran a very famous minstrel hall at 555 Broadway called Christian Wood's Minstrels.
Just right under the anonymous ones like Mayor Lindsay.
There you go.
Little known mayors.
There you go. Fernando Wood, twice mayor for a year each time.
Oh, they only held office for a year in those days?
Frequently.
Not a bad idea.
Sometimes. Yeah.
How are the potholes?
The street conditions were abysmal. You're talking mud, horse manure, awful.
Well, you had also some very bad taxi drivers back then.
Unbelievable, the horse cars.
Probably from Pakistan. You know how they are.
It could have been. Could have been. I think mostly
I'm going to get in trouble for this one tonight.
I think mostly Irish.
Yeah, I know they're
Irish. Try
to
be factual, but I'm no expert on. I was a cab driver too.
You were.
Oh yes.
Well, that's a good way to make some extra cash.
Hey, this was my main cash. That's how I supported myself in college. I took my cab out of the garage down 125th the first day when I was in Columbia College. I needed to make some money. I got my license at 16 in Tennessee. I took that cab out of that garage. I had never driven a car in New York ever. Just went out in the street and did it. And that's really the same answer about why I got involved in this crime, why I love the book, because I like to get into an unknown thing and then just, you know, surf it, do it, figure it out, you know.
So why did you start this? You were still not satisfied with your answer.
Okay. I've never read a story about a woman as desperate as this.
Or a Klingon. She never let go. She was tenacious.
Yeah. So determined, so single-minded, took such risks.
And lied a lot. And even though she got caught, she continued to lie again.
She wasn't giving up.
And this is called pathological, you know.
Yeah. And I have a little bit of sympathy for her, too.
What?
I do.
Why? She didn't get the money?
She never. She died a pauper. She showed up in Alms Court. Thunderbolt Norton.
She killed a guy.
Probably. She was let off. The guy deserved it, for God's sakes. You know, he was.
Well, that's like a lot of these landlords in New York, but let's not go there. What do you, they all deserved. They deserved to die in a horrible death in Westchester. So what happens now with her? Getting off, are you not happy? Are you not unhappy about that? I mean, you know, you don't want somebody to get off on a murder charge, do you?
It was never proven. I don't really care. What I like is the story. It's such a
Somebody killed him.
This guy was such a bad guy. He was a faro banker downtown. Yeah. He always played the banker. That's a risk-free position in that gambling game. The dealer just takes a cut and he calls the cards and that's it. He stole money from people left and right in real estate schemes in Elizabeth, New Jersey, downtown. There were 100 people who would have loved to murder the guy, and maybe a few of them got together whom Emma hired. There were confessions to this crime. There were notoriety seekers in mid-19th century New York, just like there are today. Something bad happens. A guy who's on death row, who's going to get the little zets real soon anyway, he figures he might as well. This happened. It was in the National
Police. We don't refer to capital punishment as a little zets.
Not anymore, huh?
No, well, we don't have it anymore anyway. We don't have capital. We just keep them alive and...
In New York.
And rehab them.
In New York.
Yeah, in New York. All right, so this was New York.
Yeah.
And you had it was a state and a federal crime.
Yeah. Well, there was plenty of necktie parties in New York back then.
Did they cross the state line? Did he ever cross the state line?
He did. Dr. Burdell lured the first time he raped her. He lured her to Elizabeth, New Jersey, to downtown Elizabeth, where he had some investments that he was because he thought she had money. He was under a misimpression. It's not like today with the internet. You didn't know what people had and that you couldn't figure things out. He's trying to get his hands on her money.
Yeah.
He thought she'd inherited some from her distiller husband, which she hadn't. And he wanted her to see his real estate schemes, his hotels in Elizabeth. He takes her over there. Somehow they miss the last train back. Whoops. Yeah. And end up somehow in the same Holiday Inn over there. And then he
They may not have had those yet.
Yeah, whatever. But, yeah, they crossed state lines.
Yeah. They probably had some carriage house in Freehold.
It could have been.
All right, so this dentist who was a scoundrel, complete scoundrel, he had his money in the money that didn't belong to him. Was he a good dentist?
Excellent. This guy, Harvey Burdell, co-authored a textbook on dentistry that you can get up at Columbia Physicians and Surgeons Library with his older brother, John. I've read the book. It's a wonderful book. His older brother, John, talks more about anatomy and about science and natural foods and the structure of your jaw. Harvey talks about some of that in his part of the book. It's mostly about how excited he gets staring into the mouths of gorgeous young dental patients. Yeah. But he's still a very reputable dentist. To be a dentist in those days, there were no dental schools. You hung out a shingle, you got a drill, a turnkey, there was no anesthesia, and you just started putting any kind of junk you wanted into people's mouths. There were a few reputable, medically trained dentists in this town, probably a dozen by 1857, and Harvey Burdell was one of them. He was a good dentist.
How was he at scraping off plaque?
I couldn't find any documentary evidence about
then
that.
It's a wonder that he didn't die of gingivitis or something that that his dental assistant didn't jam him with
we should have a lot of fun thinking of what a really appropriate murder weapon would have been for the guy.
Probably Wednesdays, going to work on Wednesdays. That's a murder weapon. Yeah. That kills dentists every time.
Yeah.
We'll be right back. The Joey Reynolds Show from New York. The book is called Butchery on Bond Street. What? It should be Dentistry on Bond Street by Benjamin Feldman, or Bonding on Butcher Street, because that's what dentists do, you know. Benjamin Feldman spent time going back 150 years to find out about this dentist that got murdered by his mistress. And nobody liked him anyway, and she was such a liar and cheat that nobody knows if she really did it, but she got off with his apartment, and she had five children. She was very happy until, in the end, she died broke, right? Did I get it right here?
You got it four square.
Yeah. So you got this little play going with two people who are lost souls. They're two lost souls.
Desperate people.
Yeah. And around them was this New York City lifestyle that was fashionable, but you had to give him credit. He did try to bring her into the main room.
Yes, sir. You have to remember. You have fun remembering what was Bond Street. What was Astor Place in 1857?
Yeah.
We're talking about the bonfire, money.
Money.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Astor Place, all the fancy hotels.
Yeah.
Tiffany is there. Delmonico's is there. Lord and Taylor's is there.
That's
Broadway
some
is
very
glittery.
Mighty fine, expensive Victoria's Secret corset stores.
You're telling me on Green Street, on Mercer Street, all the fancy bordellos, all the houses of assignation. It's hedge fund city. Except instead of Wall Street guys, it's Southern cotton brokers come to town to whoop it up.
And publishers.
A lot of publishers down there. A lot, and publishers who were making money back then, contradistinction
to today. Well, they're still making money. They just weren't bellyaching about
it. There you go.
And the printers.
Yes.
This was a printing city.
You're absolutely right.
And we stole it all from Philly, you know. Ben Franklin had the idea, and we ran with it.
There you go.
Now there's a scoundrel. The guy that stole Ben Franklin's ideas. No, he was a really good inventor, you know.
I know.
Had some great ideas.
I've been to his house in Market Street. Wonderful place.
He had some money that nobody, you know, he was a cash guy. He wanted to be paid in cash. You know that?
Didn't know that.
Everything about it. Well, they didn't have credit cards. But it was an interesting time to have anything happen in this city, because whatever you were first at it.
Yeah, and people,
there were like 12 people here.
The things that happened in the middle of the 19th century in the city, from the Atlantic Cable being laid, you got Peter Cooper running around, you got Cyrus Field running around, you got Elias Howe running around. All the big inventors were
shipping,
men about town.
Shipping
magnets.
You got
the shippers, you got the Lowe family. I mean, Gramercy Park in those days was where all the really rich people lived.
And the Greeks had the boats. They didn't have these little greasy spoons.
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct.
They were not running diners.
No,
They're running ships.
That's right.
And, you know, it's a romantic period, isn't it? That's what you're talking about. You fell in love with the period of time.
I love it. It's
you wish
action.
You were here. You wanted a tall hat and a tall ship.
Yeah, I would have liked to have been ridden around in a carriage that would stepped out of the muck there. You know what it was like to walk down the sidewalk in New York in 1850?
That's why you would have the man on the outside.
You sposhed.
Do you know that?
Yeah.
That was the
reason,
because you would get splashed.
Yeah. Well, look, it's a rough town. It's a rough, dangerous town. I mean, one of the reasons the crime attracted so much attention is that there was a wave of crime in New York City at the time. The streets were unsafe. If you look in George Templeton Strong's famous diary that all the historians quote, he's got page after page about how all the gentlemen about town are all of a sudden going around armed during the daytime, because there's so many muggings and garrottings happening in the street.
Were the Yankees winning?
The Yankees. I don't know. I didn't check that out. I couldn't find the box scores.
I just wonder if Dr. Bond was using cocaine in his dentistry practice.
I don't know. I think opium use for quasi-medical purposes didn't come into vogue in New York from other research, other projects I'm doing, till about 10 years later. Opium came to New York through the Far East. It came from China. And Chinese immigration to New York really hadn't started at all in 1857. Teensy weensy. I did some research.
Yeah, Little Italy was bigger than Chinatown.
There you go. There
all right, now, what was her name again, this woman who...
Emma Hempstead Cunningham Burdell.
Now, Emma, who had a lot of last names, just like Elizabeth Taylor. She married a lot of guys.
Yeah.
Was she a mercenary?
You know, I hate to pass judgment on people, but for one thing I'm sure is that Emma did not want to remain and marry into a Wesleyan Methodist family like the one into which she was born.
Was she pretty?
She is claimed to be a very handsome, buxom, dark-haired, attractive
so she was
woman,
chubby.
Even at the advanced age of 36.
I see. But chubby. Buxom meant wide.
The pictures I saw of her, how can you tell under all that cloth? There's been an improvement in things these days.
This is true. Well, there's been more revealing looks at
there
women.
We go.
Yeah. Can you picture her in spandex?
I don't want to go there.
All right, so why would she want to murder the dentist? She was getting what she wanted.
Well, only for a little while. She got attention, but he raped her, Joey. That's why she wanted to murder her. He aborted her. Yeah. He wouldn't marry her. He dumped her.
That's the unrequited love.
It's certainly.
That's the one that does it.
Certainly. He conned her. He took her to Saratoga Springs, which was the Hamptons of the day, stayed in the Congress Hotel, wined her, dined her, tried to get her into his real estate schemes. She got pregnant again. They got back to New York. You know, they're on the New York Central coming back from Saratoga. She's here in wedding bells, you know, as the locomotive's going ding, ding, ding. She's here in wedding bells. He's got a different kind of ringing in his ears, believe me. That's why she murdered him.
Well, so she didn't like him anymore.
No, sir. No, she took up with one of her boarders, this tallow dealer.
She was rather fickle.
Well, I don't know. I think she just did what she had to do.
Do you know anybody real life like this right now? Because that was real life, but do you know anybody like that?
I hope I don't. A murderer, a person who's that desperate, a murderer, I hope I don't. I don't know that I do.
Yeah.
I don't know that I do. But what do you know about people, Joe? You look them in the eye. What do you know about people?
Yeah, you don't know. You don't know what they're thinking.
You don't know what they did. You certainly don't know what they're going to do. You don't know. You just... try to be careful.
That's that criminal law side of you.
There you go.
Sticking out its ugly head.
There you go.
That's that little Clarence Darrow thing.
There you go.
Well, what we came from.
Yeah, well, you do the best you can. You know, I've stuck with one woman for 31 years, and that's a nice...
Where is she?
She's home. She had a long day. She came to my talk earlier this evening. She's exhausted.
She's heard enough of you.
For tonight,
yeah.
God bless her. She's put up with this project Francis has for 7 years.
So you've been working on this 7 years? You've been working on one book?
Yeah, off and on.
Oh, my God. You must have a lot of money saved from your Wall Street days.
We did okay.
Yeah, I will say.
Okay. I don't drive a Mercedes, and look how I'm dressed.
Well,
and,
you're dressed just like a rich guy.
Yeah, well, thanks.
That's what rich guys do.
I've been blessed. I've been lucky, and I've been blessed.
Yeah.
I've been blessed. I'm grateful to everybody and to a higher power also.
So you're able to write books now.
Yes, sir.
And stay sober.
I am quite sober.
Not in that order. So the butchery on Bond Street, you spent 7 years on a book.
Yeah, it's not full time, but yeah, that's how long it took. You know, it's a first book for me, first full length work, and you know, things just sort of come together. It's like making a loaf of bread. You got to let it rise.
So how's your career going?
I feel thrilled about it. I'm thrilled to be on your show.
Well, thank you.
I am thrilled. My PR people and so many people have helped me. I'm getting a lot of good press. I'm getting invited to speak all over town. I was at the Tenement Museum tonight. I'll be there the end of September. I'll be at the Museum of the City in New York in October. I'll be at Mid-Manhattan Public Library in October. I'll be at Greenwood Cemetery's Historic Chapel Sunday at 1 o'clock for a talk and a tour and whatever. We're sold out. You know, I'm in the New York Observer now. I'm just a kid from Tennessee who always
all this
worked.
Because of this book?
Yeah, and a lot of pushing and a lot of help. And
you must have hired a PR guy.
I did. I got two good people. You got to invest.
What it is.
You got to invest.
Steve I Green could tell.
Taught me. You got to invest in yourself, and you're going to lose money. It's
Why?
Okay. Well, you're going to lose some money. You're going to make some money. It's not about money. But you got to believe in yourself, and you got to hire people to help you.
Well, see, you're the interesting one in this whole book. You know?
Thank you.
These other two are dead. You're still with us. So, Benjamin Feldman, thanks for being here tonight. Really appreciate having you here.
My pleasure.
An interesting guy. And anybody that could spend 7 years on a book and hire a PR firm. Where have I gone wrong in my career? I'm at the home for the relatively unimportant. I better get myself a publicist.
I should be so lucky.
So did she commit the crime?
I think she did, Joey. I think she did.
Did O.J. murder his wife?
No question in my mind. He can sue me all
he wants. Did Beretta do it?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I just don't know.
We found out he did. The parrot talked. Yeah. We'll be right back.